Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Every once in a while, we have a show and somebody says, can't we have more on this subject? And today is exactly that. On college campuses around the country, alcohol abuse prevention, mental health, suicide prevention, and sexual assault prevention efforts consistently make headlines. Researchers estimate that each year, almost 700,000 college students are assaulted by another student who's been drinking, and 97,000 are the victims of alcohol-related sexual assault or date rape. Meanwhile, suicide is often referred to as the second leading cause of death among college students ages 18 to 24. These are, of course, alarming statistics. What can we do to change them? We're all here together, all of our community, with two people who can speak to that very well. Estella Rivero is the director of the Counseling Center at the University of Albany and an adjunct clinical professor in the Department of Educational and Counseling Psychology. And M. Dolores Cimini is a New York State licensed psychologist and assistant director for prevention and program evaluation at the University of Albany. These are not slouches, folks. They are PhDs, and they have studied this and really are doing some very exciting work. To be part of today's discussion, and I really, really hope you will, because I know that you are the smartest people in the world. You have great questions, and that you'll ask them today. And I'm more than happy when every time I see one of those little lights go off. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, doctors, we see headlines all the time, as we have just said, and those headlines lead us to believe that every kid on every campus is drunk out of their minds, that people don't have any concern for dates, particularly women who were picked on because of alcoholic stupor, that people are drug addicted, and that people are jumping off buildings all the time. Is that true?
No, not at all. In fact, what we find is that most college students, as you'd expect, are healthy. They're responsible in their choices. They look out for each other and help each other out, and really are a remarkable population of folks who are good citizens and good members of the community and managing their health decisions very positively.
Well, you know, I used to say in my classes at Albany that I would say, you know, I don't know about this marijuana business because I've never smoked marijuana, and I haven't. And everybody in the class would start just doubling over in laughter and pounding on their desks as if I had said, I just told a great joke. Can we expect that the entire population of the school has experienced dope?
What you're experiencing in your classroom is what we call a misperception. And that is, if we ask a college student, how much does the typical student drink? They will probably say every day, because if we look at the media, if we look at commercials, if we look at television and movies, what do people see? They see students drinking, they see students using marijuana, they see students engaging in healthy behaviors, because those are the things that get everybody's attention. You don't see much attention to the student who stays home studying. It's not as exciting. So having this information out in the media, having the movies, the TV, it makes people misperceive, in fact, that everybody is doing that.
Well, many of you out there went to college. What was your experience? Our audience tends to be a little bit older. Nevertheless, it'd be interesting. A lot of people lived through the 60s, and you know, what we've heard so many times, if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. I really want to know whether people buy the fact that it's a lot less dramatic than you might say. And I think some schools have a reputation of being a little bit more wilder than others. I know that the two places I taught at, SUNY at New Paltz, which I loved, and SUNY at Albany, which I had great respect for, consistently, you know, showed up on some of the national surveys where they said, are these party schools? University of Vermont, for example, is known as a party school. So are we, do you guys have blinders on, or are we you know, are those reputations that we have undeserved?
Well, I think that, for example, most students at the University of Albany do not use marijuana and have not used marijuana.
But you know this if from you survey ask, research.
From yeah. survey research, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, but if you ask them, they have the same misperceptions as we all have because we all see the same movies and the same examples, which is that we've literally have asked our students, so what is typical? And they see the partying student as typical. It's really not accurate, and that's a big part of our kind of interventions are to really try and address and correct those misperceptions of college students that I think we all share.
Yeah. And unfortunately, what fuels the misperceptions are things like, you say, the Princeton Review, and that is a survey of different schools, and there are rankings like the number one party school, the worst food, that kind of thing. Now, if the methods of the Princeton Review, that is how they do their surveys, are evaluated by professors, the surveys would actually receive a grade of F because they're not done well. They're not done using good survey methodology. But yet, what they do, the surveys fuel misperceptions. We were at University at Albany, we had the dubious distinction of being the number one party school both in 1999 and 2004. And what was happening is that students were coming in with the misperception that everybody drank
at
Albany.
Yeah, well, I'll go there. That sounds
yeah,
like a good
exactly.
idea. It's a good,
exactly.
good recruiting tool. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's fine. And so we were actually drawing students who were high-risk drinkers, and we had to work very hard to get that drinking rate down.
Okay, let's go right there. And how do you get it down?
Well, one of the things we do is we correct that misperception because we're all social animals and we look around at our peers and we're influenced by what they do or what we think they're doing. So one of the things we've done on our campus is really try to get the information. We have a campaign called Did You Know? And it really is all about what students really are doing on the campus. And our students all know it. They believe it. They disbelieve it. They argue about it. They're very involved with it, very engaged. And what we have found is over time, students who are most likely to be exposed, interact with, and read and get involved with a campaign are more likely to have corrected their perceptions. And as a result, their drinking goes down.
And you think that their drinking has gone down because, you know, let's face it. Look, I'm a proud SUNY faculty
Absolutely,
member.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
I love the place. But we have seen examples of, you know, students who act out in our communities and the police have to get involved and all the rest of it. So are you looking at all of this through rose-colored glasses?
Well, I think we're looking at all of this through the lens of what is, we think, the reality of the largest percentage of students who are really not being involved in those.
I believe that.
Yeah.
But we actually survey our students. We survey many more of our students than we really need to just to get good data, good numbers about the rates of drinking. So we ask them, how many drinks have you consumed in the last week? What negative consequences, what negative results of your drinking have you experienced? And these surveys are anonymous. So students are being honest. They don't have to give their names. They don't have to sign any forms. And so they're very likely to be honest. And what we're finding is that not only are rates of drinking going down, but also things related to drinking that are negative, like fighting, vandalism, sexual assaults, being a victim of sexual assault and perpetrating, and dropping grades, missing classes. All those things are going down and they're getting better in terms of climate. And then things that are related, as I mentioned, sexual assault, things that make people at higher risk for suicide are also improving. So lots of things are improving at the same time as we're addressing the alcohol use aggressively.
Well, we'll talk more about that when we come back. The telephone number, folks, and I do want to hear from you. Very important to me. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break. We'll get your calls, and we'll be right back.
support for WAMC comes from the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, serving the public for over 30 years, 800-342-3661. Dr. Jonathan Sumber, podiatrist, Kingston, a second-generation practice focusing on family foot problems. Laser treatment available, 845-331-0601. The 1850 House Inn & Tavern, Rosendale, New York, historic boutique hotel offering romantic Hudson Valley getaways, 11 guest rooms, modern amenities, expanded outdoor deck overlooking the Roundout River, the1850house.com. And Thomas Cole National Historic Site, Catskill in New York's Hudson Valley, seeing a lecture by John Wilmerding, curator of Master Mentor, Master Thomas Cole and Frederick Church, May 18th, thomascole.org.
Did they both hang up? 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I want to hear from you because you're important. Okay, so here's what. There's been a lot of reported sexual assault based on the fact that people get into alcoholic states and then they deny culpability and responsibility for that. I was telling both of you that when I went to American University, on the Washington semester program, we had at least one guy who would regularly get soused and then, assault their partner for the evening. And what I mean assault is that, you know, they would misbehave. The next day, it was a sort of, I always thought it was sort of a Southern thing, but maybe not. They would go and they would apologize and say, if I did anything that was insulting last night, would you tell me? And, oh, no, you know, so is alcoholism, now there are three phones ringing, which is good, is alcoholism an excuse for misbehavior?
No, I would say it's not an excuse for misbehavior. And we do know that there are many sexual assaults that are perpetrated by a group of people who do what you're describing, repeated misbehavior, misconduct with young women, and have lots of excuses for their behavior. But the point is that they are very often skilled, and they are repeatedly aggress against young women. And it's a small percentage of young men that behave that way. But they really account for the largest proportion of sexual assaults.
Well, you guys are both psychologists. The question I have for you is, when somebody misbehaves, do they get thrown out?
We have a conflict resolution of civic responsibility office on campus, and that office is very aggressive about following up on reports of sexual assaults. We actually have a new advocacy center as well that opened up in January at the university, and we use a protocol or a set of steps whenever we get a report. And so the students who have been sexually assaulted get referred for legal help, mental health help, support, counseling. They get referred to the hospital if they need to go there. And we also follow the due process rights of the perpetrators because part of the process involves hearings, yeah. Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to get some calls here. Let's go to MJ. All right, MJ, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi,
MJ.
I live in the RPI neighborhood in Troy, and I'm almost completely surrounded by students, and every weekend is chaotic. We never get a night where you get a full night's sleep because kids are coming in and out of their houses and yelling and screaming and going off in their cars and putting the music on full blast, coming back, and then there's other groups that walk up the street. They've come from the local bars, and they're hollering as they go merrily along. It's every weekend, and it's terrible. Okay. I've lived in this area since 78. Mm-hmm. Things were pretty peaceful until around 85 or 86. But since then, it's been awful.
So let's, MJ, thanks for calling, and let's get a response from our two professionals here. Ladies?
Well, that's a great observation. I think that it really suggests that you are noticing a change in behavior. We do see more and more attention that's been put on the drinking behavior of college students. And we have a colleague from Harvard who really called it an epidemic. And I think that it's important to note that it's very real and something we have to, we at universities have to be very active and in communities in responding and offering assistance and interventions to help students behave in a healthier way. That doesn't sound like those students are being healthy and doing things that in their own best interest.
But Estella, you seem to have painted a much rosier picture at the University of Albany than MJ is talking about here. And I think that's probably why she's calling. Is it different at Albany than RPI?
It's pretty much the same all across the Northeast. And in fact, the Northeast in general has higher rates of alcohol use than does the rest of the national population. I still want to couch the response, though. Relatively few college students engage in this very difficult behavior, but yet all we need is one or two or 10 to really cause a lot of problems in a neighborhood. And as a citizen of the Troy community, I'm sure you have several colleges in your area. There are a number of things that you can do as a citizen to help yourself.
And like what?
One is contact your local police. Let them know.
It's been done.
Have you contacted also the local college and university?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because some colleges and universities, when they've received so many reports, like the one that you're talking about, they actually get out and do what's called environmental management. That is, they get stricter in their policies. They enforce
consistently. But tell me about how can they get stricter? What would they do to get stricter?
So, for example, one of the things we do is we have a campus community coalition. That, I think, is an important step, and it may be that RPI has one. I can't speak to that, but it really involves the university working with the neighborhood, with the neighbors, to try and identify and address the issues as best we can.
Yeah, well, that sounds good, but what does it mean?
Well, one of the things that it means is, for example, there have been negotiations and contracts with the bars and distributors of liquor in the area to try and really crack down and ensure that they're not selling to underage drinkers.
Okay, so let's say they're
you're reducing the availability. What you're doing is trying to reduce the availability.
Now,
of
far
alcohol.
Be it from me to be contentious, as you know. But you know, I mean, every time they sell a drink, it may be $8 or $9 for a bar. So they check the cards, and if you know somebody isn't underage, they just keep giving them the booze. I mean, what do you now? Somebody will call up and say, "Oh no, not at my bar." You know, we know when somebody's. We've had the training. We know when
right,
it's too
right,
much.
Right.
But I think MJ makes a very good point. And MJ, I can't tell you how grateful I am that you made this call, because it's important to hear. And then, so community coalitions is a good idea, but not everybody has the time, the effort, or the energy to get into a.
One of the problems that I think this has resulted from is some years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, RPI made a decision not to put up any more buildings on campus. They have since changed their mind, and they have put some, or they've taken over some buildings downtown where they can have some control of the kids.
When
they're on RPI property, they have some control. But because they didn't build for so many years, we had landlord vultures who came in here and turned houses into mini dorms.
Mm-hmm.
So they're my neighborhood. I invite you to come over and spend a night, especially on a weekend. It's really quite delightful.
And by the way, it doesn't stop there, MJ. You could go to Ithaca, where you talk about people who've gone into the housing business. Both my kids went to Cornell, and I could tell you, it got pretty wicked. Some of these street parties.
But, you know, I want to also let you know that hearing from you makes a huge difference. It may feel to you that when you call RPI or wherever that you're not being heard, but I know we listen when we hear from the neighbors.
Right.
It matters to us to hear from the neighbors and what they're seeing on weekends.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that happens, you see, is that they realize, they certainly have heard from me and others in the neighborhood. I'm sure you're not alone, but... They say they haven't got much control or any control of the kids who are out on the houses. The kids know they got rights.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
unless they're caught in the act of drinking on the street and creating a lot of noise at the time, there isn't anything that can be done. And the kids know that.
Right. MJ, I have a thought for you, and that is that in Albany, for many years, we thought that way, but we heard so many comments from community members like yourself that are so important that we actually then partnered more aggressively with our local police because we just can't have that happen anymore. Mm-hmm. We need to have our neighbors respected. So please... please share your voice with the community.
Okay, I'm sorry, MJ.
I've done that. Many others have done it. The problem is the police force is has a much fewer number on call on the weekends, and they've got the whole city to be in charge of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that RPI should hire policemen. They have their own public safety, but their thing is, public safety is for their students' public safety. The hell with us.
MJ,
I should pay for policemen to patrol the neighborhoods.
Okay, MJ, I'm going to put a stop now to this because of your first call, every phone is ringing off the hook, and I want to make sure we get to as many people as possible. Thanks for starting us off, MJ. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye. All
right.
Okay, let's go to James. Okay. James, you're on. James, okay, so here's the deal, folks, just so you know the rules. You have to turn the radio off and keep the phone by your ear because there's a seven-second delay here. So, James, I'm going to try one more time before I let you go. James, are you there? James from Monroe. He is not. Okay, goodbye, James. All right, let's go to, I see what I did wrong. Ooh, James is number three. Okay, James, I hung up on number two, whoever that was. Okay, James, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I grew up in an era New Paltz used to be the place to go, and I was in the Army, and one thing that I found was that I was busy working as I was going to school, and I didn't have time, even though I got wild with everybody, I didn't have time to spend all the time or disrespect to spend all the time because I didn't want to, waste everything.
Sure.
And these kids, a lot of these kids, they're away from home. They've been pampered. They have no idea reality the way it is today. They need more structure in the colleges where it isn't just a 40-hour, you know, you go in, you go to school, and then your time is to do whatever you want. They should be more forced a participation in a school where they have less time and it's more organized.
Okay, now, James, we have two eminent psychologists here with us, both of whom have made the following argument. It is a small group that causes this trouble and that more people are like you than like them. What do you think of them, Apples?
Well, that's true. But to control the people like me, because let's face it, you get somebody who's out of control, and chances are they're going to get any control of their life whatsoever in their whole lifetime is a lot slimmer than someone like me or people
Okay, gotcha. But I'm a lifetime college professor, right? So let me ask you this. You say there has to be more control by the university. All right, lay out a plan where the university can put more control into place.
Well, as far as their schooling goes, instead of just being there for, their schooling goes, they should maybe have some work around the area, maybe in a field that they're going to school for, a volunteer, but they
so
get credit for it.
Internships and community service, which our students are very involved in.
Indeed they are.
That's absolutely fabulous. We have many students who work just like you did. Lots of first-generation
students. Right,
yeah.
But how do you stop them from carousing on a weekend is the question. In other words...
Well, the less time you have, the less money you have, the less carousing you're going to do.
Okay, James, I think we've heard you, and we thank you for your call. Great.
And James is right, by the way.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. James is right. And you want to riff on that for a minute?
Yeah. Yes. James, you raise a very important point in what you say. And the University at Albany is working very hard to provide more and more opportunities for our students to engage their time. For example, we have a new recreation facility, recreation programs, lots of clubs and organizations that many students participate in. So there's a lot more going on, and we're very aware of that.
Can they drink on campus?
Well, if they're over 21, but not.
Wasn't there a Rathskeller or something?
It was closed when the drinking age changed.
Okay, very good. Okay, thank you for that. Let's go to Jelly. Is it Jelly or Julie? Julie in Highland. Julie.
Hi, how are you?
We're good.
I have three sons, and they're all in college. One is just graduating, and my youngest is starting in the fall. One is an RA. He goes to Buffalo University, UB. Mm-hmm. And my other son is just finishing up at St. Rose. Now, raising them, we didn't keep liquor as a big taboo, and I feel that, and they've all commented, when they went to college, other kids would go crazy with alcohol because they were not allowed to drink at home, or, you know. And I think that lady that called about RPI saying it changed in the 80s, that's when the drinking age changed. Before then, I think the colleges were able to have parties on site where they were watched. The kids were monitored. If anybody got out of control, it was handled. Now they're doing it in secret, or they're having underground parties or whatever. And that's where a lot of this trouble is coming from, I feel. Because the drinking age should be.
Changing the drinking age is really, and you raise again a very important point. Changing the drinking age is somewhat of a two-edged sword, because in as much as we see some of the things that you describe, there are actual surveys out there, national surveys, that raising the drinking age to age 21 has actually made big differences in reducing the highway and traffic deaths that occur nationally.
That has also come from education in the whole driving while intoxicated business. Because, you know, I turned 21 before the age changed, and back in the 80s, if you were caught driving drunk, either you got, the police would say, leave your car there, or we'll follow you home. I mean, so things have changed enormously since then anyway. So I think if the drinking age was 18 still, I think you probably have a lot less problems with the kids underage drinking at the schools and going crazy, because the schools will monitor them.
Julie, we thank you for your thoughts. Good luck to your sons. Sound like great kids. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to David in Millerton. Okay, David, you're on.
Yes, hi, folks. My question has to do with underage drinking on college campuses, and I'm an alumnus and also am fairly familiar in recent times with a liberal arts college. I'll just say that's within a 50-mile radius of Albany, and I wonder sometimes if the penalties are not strict enough for underage drinkers. And where I'm coming from on this, I'll put this out and then take my answer off the air, is I hear from time to time that, no, you can't make them more severe because then you drive the drinking more underground and you maybe cause more binge drinking. But on the other hand, if there was a penalty such as the first time you're caught drinking underage on campus within 2 weeks, there has to be a conference with your parent in attendance at the college, otherwise you're suspended for the rest of the year. The second time you are caught, you're automatically suspended for the rest of the semester, and the third time you're expelled from the school. Again, maybe a little severe, but I think we're too much in the other direction.
Let's ask the psychologist. What do you think, ladies?
Well, actually, we're closer to doing that than you might think. We do parental notification.
Is that right?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
And we do a referral to something called the STEPS program, which is an early intervention program from the very first offense. So it really is, we respond to any time there's any indication of drinking. And we know that the early interventions help students reduce their drinking.
What would they have to do to get caught? In other words, we have this population that drinks. Every once in a while, you grab somebody. What would they be doing? They would be walking around drunk, or
that's one thing. The other thing that could happen is that they could be around alcohol, and also people get referred to our judicial system if they are serving to people under age 21. So there could be a variety of things that would refer a student.
Things like if you have an empty beer bottle in your room, you'd be referred. If you're present at in a situation where somebody else has alcohol and you're underage, that's an offense. I mean, we're very we cast the net wide because we want to bring those people in, have conversations with them, as this individual was mentioning, and let their parents know what's going on so we can do something about it.
I want to thank all of you who are calling. All five phones are ringing right now. That's great, and I really appreciate it, personally appreciate it. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, currancompliance.com. Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examinations and classic eyewear in historic Uptown Kingston, most insurances accepted, optical diversity in the Hudson Valley, cohenoptometry.com. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting Second Friday, featuring hands-on art making and The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Whiston Spurn, May 9th, from 4 to 8 p.m., smith.edu/artmuseum. And The Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York, featuring over 100 handcrafted cheeses, grilled cheese sandwiches and soup, Tilldale Farm organic beef and pork, artisan pantry items, and cured meats. TheCheeseTraveler.com.
Okay, my friends, we're all going into the lightning round. This is the last segment of the show. And so we want you to keep your comments short, and we'll try to get everybody in. We got one who said, I was in at WAMC.org, excuse me, at VoxPop at WAMC.org. I was in Troy on Friday evening a couple of years ago and found the police had blocked off a full block of a public street to automobile traffic. A resident explained to me that there were several bars on the block and there was so much drinking and misbehavior on the block on the weekends by college students that the police had determined it was unsafe to allow cars on the block. There was a public thoroughfare that it was, as a matter of public policy, reserved for drunken students. And thank you for your nice words, Carl. Let's go to Pete in Poughkeepsie. Pete, you're on. Pete in Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on a couple of things. I know we're in the lightning round here, so I'll keep it brief. I'm a recent college graduate. I graduated 2 years ago. So I kind of have it fresh in my mind, this whole thing that we're talking about. In respect to the last caller about his idea of, you know, anyone caught drinking should be a referral and all that. My college did it really well. I'm not going to say what college it was, but they did it really well because they had kind of a zero tolerance with underage drinking on campus, but they had an open door policy at the dorms in regards to if you go to a house party off campus, you get drunk there, they would rather have you back in the dorm safe than out, you know, causing mischief in the streets and in the town and stuff like that. So while you couldn't drink there, they would not, you know, give you a hard time if you came back, you know, somewhere. I mean, if you fall down blackout drunk, then they would do something, but if you came back with some, you know, smell on your breath and you know, a little
okay, we got it.
To your
Pete,
stuff.
Pete,
but,
you got
so
that.
I think that works really well in terms of it doesn't make the
okay,
make
no,
the
Pete.
College
hey,
feel
Pete.
Like they have to hide.
Hey, Pete,
yeah.
It's going around for the third time here.
Yeah, so,
ladies.
So one of the things I want to jump in and say is that one of the things I think is a really good trend is a Good Samaritan policy that's now both in the state as well as on our campus, for example, so that we absolutely, if we encourage people to get health care, to get help, if they're intoxicated, if there are any questions about their well-being, and that really kind of says that that's the most important thing.
But what's
and
the Good Samaritan
not...
part of that?
Well, the Good Samaritan is that if you take somebody in to the emergency room or if you call for an ambulance and you've been drinking, you will not be referred to the conduct system for your drinking.
So if you bring a roommate,
that's correct. If you're in the process of helping somebody else get help that they need, the health care they need,
and you're intoxicated, then you will not get in trouble, nor will the person that needs medical attention.
Okay. Right. Okay, Pete, thanks for the call. Appreciate it a lot. Let's go to Larry in Poughkeepsie. Larry in Poughkeepsie, you're there.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I'm a parent of two recent graduates of the SUNY system. I'd like the panel to comment on the following. What about the part of the schools in terms of being honest and upfront about the incidences and statistics relating to sexual abuse and, in particular, excessive drinking?
Okay, Larry wants to know. Okay, got it. Larry wants to know about transparency. Are we transparent at SUNY at Albany, New Paltz, these other places? Are we transparent about what kind of problem we have?
Well, we certainly are, and I believe in the SUNY system we are transparent about the level of problem. There are reporting requirements that are required by federal law. We ourselves have a very open campaign. Our social norms campaign is very open about the level of drinking and alcohol use on campus. It's a healthy norm, but it's out there.
But I think Larry, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I think Larry is concerned. How would he know?
Just as a follow-up, yeah. One of the state universities, they have their own on-campus ambulance system. So not only do they report to incidents on campus, but they'll also report to incidents off campus that involve students, and that serves to keep those statistics out of, rather than that person off campus calling 911 and having that go through the regular system.
We don't do that at our school. We have an ambulance system at our school, and everything is reported through the police and is public information. So my best response to you is that schools in the SUNY system may vary, and we can speak best about our own school. But in terms of our school, we do have the transparency.
Okay, Larry, thank you. Let's go to Jonathan in Norfolk. Okay, Jonathan, bring it on.
I was wondering what the role of economics was in all this. As you can understand, I grew up in England. I graduated from universities 40 years ago.
Did anybody get drunk in England while you graduated?
Well, no, I'm going to come to that. I'm coming to that point. And that is that today, the cost of alcohol has been reduced by a factor of approximately 4. In other words, it costs a pound, it now costs 25 pennies.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered whether that had also been a factor in the United States, that the relative cost of alcohol had fallen in precipitously.
Jonathan, I don't think we know the answer to the question, but I can tell you this much. I was talking to a restaurateur who I know quite well the other night. They make more on a single drink, which can be $8 or $9, in his restaurant than they make on the meal, the whole meal. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like the cost of alcohol in some situations is going down. Ladies, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, some of the bars in different areas, and I'm talking nationally now, do have things such as drink specials off campus. And so that sometimes may draw students, and students may then order a large amount of alcohol, and they share it among each other and that kind of thing. And I really do think that is a factor. I totally agree with the caller that economics does play a role. And so one of the things that experts recommend in terms of what we call environmental management, that is changing things that are around us in terms of policies and that kind of thing.
Okay, give us an example.
Increase prices of alcohol.
How do you get a bar owner to do that?
Well, sometimes there could be state and local pressures to do that. One thing that our community coalition is doing very effectively is they encourage, not mandate, bar owners to sign what's called a tavern owner agreement that affects pricing. They agree to limit drink specials and the like. And then we have peer pressure among bar owners that most bar owners want to do the right thing, and they sign on. Are there going to be those few bars that don't want to sign on and do their own thing? Absolutely. But we're making progress a little bit at a time.
Jonathan, as always,
put the question to the bar owner. I mean, how about alcohol bought in supermarkets and package stores?
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, I've no idea the relative consumption from those sources as compared to bars and restaurants, but obviously they are relative.
Yeah, no, you're
right.
Jonathan,
right.
I'm so sorry. I always like to give you a little bit more time because you're so intelligent. However, we have a lot of people behind you. And
they're also intelligent. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jonathan. Okay, let's go to Todd in New Lebanon. Todd, you're on.
Hi. I went to school in Oneonta in the middle 60s, back when you were still a young boy.
Yeah, Alan. Exactly. Yeah. not quite. Yeah.
And we used to have bars down there that sold 10-cent beers, and they would have 800 students in the place. So they're closed now. They've gone out of business. But we never had any sexual problems back then, and that was the beginning of the sexual revolution. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And also, what the English guy was talking about is the price.
Jonathan, yeah.
I mean, you know, if it's cheap and you get drunk really quick, then you can go. You know, we were smoking pot, drinking, and taking acid all at once. And we managed to get through it. And also, back then, I had a Regent scholarship, but the tuition was $200.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
so
for
what does that have
university.
To do? What does that have to do with drinking? The tuition.
What does that have to do with drinking?
Yeah, yeah.
It means that you're not under so much pressure to worry about all the money you're going to owe when you graduate from college.
Oh, you think that's what's leading to the drinking?
It could be.
Yeah, I think what you might be saying is that students today may be using alcohol and marijuana and other drugs for different reasons, whereas in the 60s it was more just to chill out and relax and be more social. What's happening now is that students today are using it to address stressors like financial stressors, home issues at home, mental health.
I'm hearing these kids getting out of college with like home mortgages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you better believe it. Yeah, yeah. Hey, Todd, you make some good points. Thank you for being here. Let's go to Jim in New York City. Okay, Jim, go.
Yes, hi. My point is, I have 2 points. One, there's a dire need for counseling, and I mean dynamic counseling with respect to the origin of the problem, which is why do the kids have to drink the way they drink? And it's to reduce inhibitions. And it has to be taught, and the message has to get across that drinking, to get high, to get drunk, is foolish and stupid in many cases. Now, back in the 70s, I know of a half a dozen suicides and car wrecks where the kids were killed, all having to do with substance abuse and depression or substance abuse and bad judgment while driving. So the 60s and 70s were a disaster with respect to the use of drugs. Many people died, many people OD'd. Number two, how come it's never discussed with respect to responsibility? So if you have a person who says, well, when I gave consent, I was inebriated. Okay, that's true. But their partner was also inebriated. And to have somebody live with a felony of that nature,
okay,
when the circumstances are dubious, Jim? And you're not applying an equal standard.
Okay, Jim, the last thing I want to do is cut you off, but we got to get a response from our two experts on this. They are the heads of this. Go ahead, ladies. Who wants to go? The question is responsibility. Are we teaching responsibility?
Well, we are teaching responsibility, and we certainly agree with the caller that we need what we call early intervention. That is, to get to the issues, to talk about alcohol use and the risks and how to reduce those risks early before problems happen. And I also want to note another important thing that the caller is saying, and that is that substance use, alcohol, other drug use, often goes along with depression and other mental health issues, and that's called co-occurrence. So when we actually address one thing, like the alcohol and drug use, we may actually then also help and improve the mental health of students.
That's true. Okay, Jim, thank you very much. Let's go to Chris in Albany. Chris, make it fast. We're running out of time here.
Okay. I was calling. I wanted to ask about how the agreement between SUNY and the Office of Civil Rights had been resolved. SUNY was supposed to report back to the the Office of Civil Rights by January 31st, 2014.
This may be another show. This may be another show, and I think it is another show because we're sort of sticking to the. Unless I'm missing your point, Jim. Here, we're talking today about alcohol and alcohol abuse dependency. So this would be another. Another show.
I thought you had been touching on sexual assault to some extent.
Well, we have. Because this, but that's not what we're talking about today. But go ahead, ladies.
Just quickly that yes, I think that there have been responses, but the reports have been complex and the responses are lengthy. So hard to quickly summarize.
So more to come. Yeah.
More to come. On that.
Stay tuned.
I had filed a FOIL request for it back in March, and I still haven't gotten a response to it. That may have to do
okay,
with
but you're
going
to have to take that up with the university council, Jim. Chris, I'm so sorry. I wish we had more time for you, but we don't right now. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Tom in Kingston. Tom, you're on.
I have a crazy idea. What would happen if we allowed students on campus in a controlled situation to drink from age 18 up?
Well, in other words, go back to the other way. Mm-hmm. Ladies?
Well, I think that those who argue from your point of view talk about modeling, talk about sort of the process of learning to drink with those adults around you and would argue that that's important. On the other side, there is the increase in traffic fatalities and the realities.
Would be.
Yes.
And
the
we
realities,
know that because it's gone
because
the other
it's
way.
It's been the other way, right.
Yeah. Okay, Tom, thanks for the call. Okay, let's go to Sydney in Albany. Okay, Sydney, you're on, but got to make it fast.
Hello.
Are
yes,
you...
hi, thank you.
Sure.
I'm glad to hear Sydney is being so transparent. That's great. So I have two questions. One, have you had any incidents of heroin on campus? And two, have you had suicides in the last few years, and have they increased?
Ladies?
I'll defer to my director here.
Yeah, the incidents of heroin, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about. We're certainly seeing in the press what you're reacting to from downstate, Staten Island, New York Times just yesterday talking about increasing availability of heroin.
It's cheap compared
it's
to the
cheap compared to the other
stuff,
right. So we are a microcosm, and we are certainly on the lookout because we expect, as things happen in other parts of New York State, they will reach us sooner or later.
Okay, now that's one, but let's go to two, which is suicide.
We have suicide rates are, I would say, they're the second leading cause of death for this age group, but they're very low, and we certainly have not had any in the last couple of years that I'm aware of, and I'm usually aware of those. And when we look at the on-campus population, but that's not, we have a lot of programs in place, and it's certainly something that we are always working very hard to prevent.
We could talk for hours about what we're doing to prevent suicide. And I also want to add on the heroin part of the question that the university is making great efforts to address heroin use. Actually, our police and our ambulance are getting trained to administer Narcan, which is
the antidote.
Life-saving.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. I wanted to give a special apology to Gerard of Saratoga and Allison of Northampton, both of whom I'm sure had good questions. So, but unfortunately, we've run out of time. I wanted to give a very special thank you to our wonderful guests here today from SUNY at Albany and PhD psychologists who have studied this and who are really thinking about it. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it very much. Thank you to Estella Rivero and M. Dolores Chimney for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or Vision Excel eyecare.com in Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. Ashfieldstone.com. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And from the Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting Healthy Ulster Spring with 1 month passes for Ulster County residents, May 5th through 11th, mohonkpreserve.org for more information. Thanks again for everybody for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach, always a great volunteer. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.